Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 to 12. Visitors from the East. Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the reign of King Herod. About that time, some wise men from eastern lands arrived in Jerusalem asking, "Where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose, and we have come to worship him." King Herod was deeply disturbed when he heard this, as was everyone in Jerusalem. He called a meeting of the leading priests and teachers of religious law and asked, "Where is the Messiah supposed to be born?" "In Bethlehem in Judea," they said, "for this is what the prophet wrote. And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not least among the ruling cities of Judah. For a ruler will come from you who will be the shepherd for my people Israel." Then Herod called for a private meeting with the wise men, and he learned from them the time when the star first appeared. Then he told them, "Go to Bethlehem and search carefully for the child. And when you find him, come back and tell me, so that I can go and worship him too." After this interview, the wise men went their way, and the star they had seen in the east guided them to Bethlehem. It went ahead of them and stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were filled with joy. They entered the house and saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasure chests and gave him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. When it was time to leave, they returned to their own country by another route, for God had warned them in a dream not to return to Herod. This is the word of the Lord.
Great nation. Glory be the supreme emperor. Glory be the great council. Greetings to all of you honored guests, delegates, representatives of the great council and the supreme ruler. It is an honor and a privilege to be able to speak to you today. As many of you know, the great council generously funded an expedition last year composed of a formidable team of great scientists, astrologers, philosophers, warriors, and artisans, all of which were led by me. A philosopher and astrologer myself, I was honored to lead such a team of elite experts. The Great Council today asked me to give an official report of my findings to all of you. I will emphasize that the final conclusions of these findings are mine and mine alone. And I urge you to investigate the conclusions of the other team members on their own terms. Now, the main hypothesis behind this expedition was based on two questions. One, is there a God of God? A king of kings. That is there a God beyond and even greater than the gods and rulers we know and worship? And number two, does this God love us? And if so, how can we know? These two questions form the basis of my thesis and life's work. So let me quickly explain them. In regards to the question, is there a God of gods? Most civilizations have a supreme being. The Greeks have the god of thunder, Zeus. The Egyptians have the creator sun god, Amun-Ra. These gods are chieftains and hold a higher position than the other gods. In few religions, though, there is only one true God. Our own people have long admired the teachings of Zoroastrianism, who follow the one creator God, Ruach Mazda, and Israel, which became the final destination of our expedition, too, believes in one God who has no name, only known as I am that I am, or I will be that I will be. In our own land here, we have evolved to believe that there really is no such thing as a God. We humans are the closest thing to God, and our supreme emperor, the one with the absolute power, absolute wealth, and absolute will, is the absolute God. The closest thing we have to a God of gods is one called Mammon. That is the personification of money, the tool which can give one access to unlimited power. Those who acquire the riches of Mammon gain power, fame, influence, and even the extension of their years on earth. Their names are etched on arenas, and statues are built in their honor, and their icons litter our homes and fill our pockets. And those without money are utterly destitute and cursed. But even this Mammon is subservient to the supreme emperor and all us human gods. The expedition was an attempt to answer this great question: is there a being, a god of gods, greater than Zeus, greater than Aru Mazda, Mammon, and even greater than the supreme emperor? And even greater than ourselves. Indeed, some of you funded my expedition, confident that it would reveal with even more glory the power and the majesty of our great nation, our great council, our supreme emperor. The second question is, if such a being exists, does he love us? If so, how can we know? This is why I turn to Israel. As many of you know, Israel is a very small nation. As we speak, it is enslaved under the Roman Empire, totally weak and feeble. But you have heard the stories. You have heard how they were able to rise up from 400 years of slavery of Egypt through legendary acts of God and a servant named Moses. You have heard how they survived the wilderness 40 years with no food or water. And they defeated stronger nations than their own to create their own land, a land God promised to them. You have heard that even though many, through many foolish blunders of their leaders, after empires crushing their armies and invading their land, even though they themselves rejected their own God time and time again, they still exist today. Even after so many other more powerful nations have been wiped from the earth, it is simply unbelievable. Some people from Jewish culture even compose the council here and are active in our great nation. Reluctantly, after seeing these facts, it caused me to wonder if the reason that they remain is because of the love and grace of their God. He cared for them despite their rebellion and despite impossible obstacles threatening their very existence. This love is vastly different than the love we understand here. Failure and rebellion in our empire is only met with subjugation and death. failure to meet the standards of the divine, to sin against God and our emperor, is met with righteous judgment. Love is always conditional to wholehearted obedience. Israel, though, was different. Because of this, I started to try to understand this God of Israel. I worked with historians, scholars, to understand the philosophy and their world beliefs. We did not have access to all the relevant texts, but a picture emerged from the texts we did have. There was a prophecy. As the Jewish hero Moses was chosen to deliver his people from the slavery of Egypt, so the God of Israel would rise up a new king and a priest to deliver his people from a new slavery. And as king, this one would reign for eternity with goodness and justice. And as priest, he would perform the proper rites and rituals so that his people could worship and be united to their God. After seeing this, we knew that our destination was not a place, but a person, this predicted Messiah. Therefore, we collected gifts for this person. We brought gold, the only fine element suited for a king. We also brought frankincense, which is used by priests in ceremonies, and incense in order to reach their God. At the time of this, it seemed to me that this heroic prophecy was just a typical one to ancient Near East cultures. Nothing special. But looking at the text, there was something that did not quite fit, and I couldn't figure it out. We also brought myrrh, a fine gift in itself, but also a gift with a deeper meaning. Throughout this whole investigation, I could not help but sense that there was a spiritual force, no, a spiritual person guiding me along. And especially in the moment of collecting the appropriate gifts, a custom very important in our nation, I felt led to this particular jar of myrrh. Astrology, however, was what really expedited the journey. According to one Jewish scripture, a star would announce the Messiah's coming. It reads, "I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star will come out of Jacob. A scepter will rise out of Israel." Now, I will not go over all the astrological findings here. You can find all the details on the retrograde motion of the heavenly body, likely a planet known to many cultures as the King of Planets, in my final report, which will be made available to you. For now, I will simply refer to it as a star, for that is what it looked like in the sky, and a brilliant star it was. We as a team pored over hundreds of calculations and theories to map out the movements of this star, and all of them pointed to the nation Israel. The timing was also convincing. For 400 years, Israel was under the slavery of Egypt until the time of Moses. And according to the Hebrew scriptures, it had been 400 years since the last prophet Malachi brought a message from God. Since then, he had been silent to the cries of Israel. We sensed that it was time for Israel's God to speak, and we prepared for the long journey. We were all set and proceeded to leave, and as you remember, it was here, the great hall that you sent us away with your blessings and prayers to many gods. The Supreme Emperor and the Great Council provided many good gifts that helped us on our journey. And these gifts are well used. It was hard country. The weather uncooperative. Twice, bandits raided our caravan despite our armed guards. Disease and doubts infected some of the team. And a whole section of our caravan fled into the night. We have not heard from them since. I, too, doubted the trek. Doubted the God we were searching for. And yet, the star held true, guiding our way. It was months before we finally reached our destination. During the long travel, I was able to maintain my sanity through obtaining more sections of the Jewish sacred texts. And I came upon two specific writings by the prophet Isaiah, which changed everything for me. The first text from Isaiah says, he says, "It is too small a thing for you to be my servant, to restore the tribes of Jacob and bring back those of Israel I have kept. I will also make you a light for the Gentiles, for the nations, that my salvation may reach to the ends of the earth." This God of gods, this King of kings, not only for Israel, for the whole world, every nation, for me. The second passage from Isaiah says, "He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering, familiar with pain, like one from whom people hide their faces. He was despised, and we held him in low esteem. Surely he took our pain, bore our sufferings, yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him, and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds we are healed." A little further down the scroll it reads, "Yet it was the Lord's will to crush him and to cause him to suffer. Though he had done no violence, no deceit was in his mouth. And though the Lord makes his life an offering for sin, he will see his offspring and prolong his days, and the will of the Lord will prosper in his hand. After he has suffered, he will see the light of life and be satisfied. By his knowledge, my righteous servant will justify many, and he will bear their iniquities. Therefore, I give him a portion among the great. He will divide the spoils with the strong, because he poured out his life unto death and was numbered with the transgressors. For he bore the sin of many and made intercession for the transgressors." For me, this was incredible. In the story of Moses, God revealed his power through might and through force. And this is how all nations reveal their power. They try to evade death, or they bring death on others. But in this new Savior, this new Moses, however, the God of God's true power would not be shown through force, but through suffering, even through death. I realize that this is true power. True power is not endlessly trying to escape death, pain, and suffering, but rather true power is simply accepting death and suffering, confident that you are powerful enough to endure it, to even rise from the dead. This is why I was led to bring the myrrh. The God of gods would reveal his true power not by sending another human servant, but by becoming a human himself. Myrrh is used to make human life here on earth more pleasant. In Jewish culture, it is used as perfume for clothes, beds, and during wedding ceremonies. God, the King of Kings, would live among us, suffer temptations like us, yet he would be perfect and sinless, no deceit on his lips, and we would not relate to such as him. And as a result of his perfect life, Isaiah says we will kill him. He would accept this power of death. And myrrh was also used to embalm bodies after dead. And through this, the power of God of gods, the King of Kings, would be revealed, because death would have no power over him. He will rise. His salvation will be revealed to many. The deliverance of this king and priest would bring not only freedom from an empire, but freedom from death itself. It would mean healing and forgiveness from all evil things we have done in the name of death, and the promise that we will see the light of life and be satisfied even in the face of suffering and death. He, God, would do all this because he loved us. Just like he loved Israel, he would never give up on us. He would deliver us, not because we were great, we were worthy or good, but because he is great. He is power and he is love. And the night before we were to enter the land of the Jews, I relayed this new understanding to the rest of my companions. Once in the land of Israel, the star disappeared from view. There was debate among us where we should go, for we were eager in our pursuit. The capital, Jerusalem, was the most obvious choice. The appropriate place for God of gods would be the most glorious city. Yet to my mind, it was also the most risky. At the time, Herod, the king, was known for his psychopathic tendencies and severe paranoia. One Roman emperor said of him, "I would rather be Herod's sow than his sons." Herod, too, believed that he was the supreme ruler and suppressed any challenge to his power, even if it meant his own family. And for us to come and suggest that a king of kings, a ruler greater than himself, was born in his own land, it did not seem like the wisest course of action. So we attempted to be discreet in our inquiries, but it was in vain. When we started to ask the crowds, "Where is the king of the Jews?" he heard of our expedition and called for us. And out of respect for our great nation, we could not refuse an invitation from a king. To my surprise, he openly revealed to us the scriptures that we did not have access to. He gave us this one to where the child be born. "But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means the least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people, Israel." He asked us, once we found the child, to come back so he too could worship him. We left the king's court relieved and started towards this Bethlehem. The star warmly greeted us again as we started our journey. And when we came to where the star rested, all my hypothesis, all my questions about this God of gods was confirmed. Instead of an opulent mansion, there was a mud hut, a normal home, and there he was, a little boy, unremarkable really, of about 2 years old, just looking at us, strange figures, holding his mother's hand. Immediately I worshipped him. I bowed down, humiliated myself, and worshipped the God of gods. He accepted the gifts with bright eyes and then ran back behind his mother. His name was Jesus. Jesus, which in Hebrew means "the Lord saves." We heard of his humble birth in a stable lined with straw rather than an ordained temple with fine sheets. We heard of the virgin birth, the angels, the promise of salvation to all peoples. You can read all these facts and more in my final report. And at the sight of all this, I rejoiced, for I'd found what I was looking for. And then it was time to come home to our great nation. Among us, there was a debate whether we should return to King Herod or not. It'd be very disrespectful and dishonoring if we did not. We decided to spend the night and find a course of action in the morning. That night, one of our companions had a dream warning us not to return. And who are we to resist the dream's omen? We came home to our great nation by a different, longer, and more treacherous route, a journey harder than the first. And now I stand before you a year after our expedition. Since then, I have changed. And I've become restless ever since because I have found him. He, Jesus, is the answer to my hypotheses. There is a God of gods, a King of kings. He does love us Jesus of Nazareth is supreme, and he is love. He is, he was, he always will be. He is the only one worthy of our faith and worship. And as a result, I must give up my allegiance to other gods. Give up allegiance even to myself. I see this is not good news to all in the council, especially the powerful. Jesus is great, is greater than our nation, greater than the council, greater than even the supreme emperor. Jesus is Lord of all, which means any power only comes from him. This is my conclusion of the matter. I will not renounce it. I will not go back from it. I accept the life offered by the little boy, even for outsiders like me, even if it means death. I have faith that even death is a pitiful enemy to his power and his love. Glory be to the God of Israel and his son, Jesus the Messiah. Glory be to him. May his kingdom and his love and his power never end. Jesus is Lord! He's Lord!